Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. It's a holiday weekend, but as we know from the summer, the UFC is always delivering for its fans. And we have an interesting card here with the heavyweight bout, Blades against Lewis in the main event for UFC Fight Night. That is at the UFC Apex in Vegas. Remember, smaller octagon. We're going to break that down with Matthew and Lou, who have some thoughts on the main and co-main, also some plays, and then also other plays scattered throughout the card. The best play, Lou's best bet is on the prelim card. So make sure you listen to the entire pod. And this is on a Friday morning. We're taped this on a Wednesday because of the holiday. So we're going to be tweaking things. Maybe UFC is going to move to Fridays. We'll see. But we appreciate everyone's patience and flexibility on this front. Just trying to deliver and get the most downloads and also get the best product to you, our listeners. So we appreciate everyone's patience and rating, reviewing, subscribing, all that fun stuff. So hopefully some more winners on this holiday weekend, maybe overlapping with the discounted shopping on Friday. Remember all the craze out there in the obviously online as well. So we'll get to Matthew and Lou straight ahead.
You using the whole fist, Doc?
And that is how we welcome in our two UFC guests, Matthew Holt, Lou Finicaro. Good to be with you guys. It's been a fun ride for this UFC stretch that we started really in the summer when the sports shut down. So as we head into Thanksgiving, it's always nice to have a UFC podcast with you gentlemen for the UFC Fight Night here in Las Vegas at the Apex. Lou, I know your best bet is on the undercard. We're going to get to that one in a little bit, but I want to start with the main event, Curtis Blaydes, Derek Lewis. Pretty high price here, minus 360, minus $4. Lou, any way to play this one?
Yeah, I think the high price is warranted. Blaydes is a legit top three heavyweight. And then there's a chasm between 4 and 15. Lewis is in the lower degree. If you were to make a style that would be perfect for a heavy, unrelenting, forward-pressing wrestler, it would be a stand-up slugger. That's exactly what Lewis is. He struggles to make the weight, and he's limited on cardiovascular. That said, he's very tough, and he's durable, and he's highly explosive for 6-7 minutes. I expect this fight to be pretty one-sided in the Blaydes' direction.
Okay, so maybe sometimes there's value on a big favorite, and there's some 330s out there, so it's not necessarily definitely $4. Matthew, what about yourself?
I like the over here. I mean, Lou just talked about the toughness of Derek Lewis. This is a tough guy to finish, 6-2 in his last 8 fights. And if we look at some of those fights, Alexander Volkov dominating Lewis for, you know, the vast majority of the fight, 14 minutes and 45 seconds to be exact. And finally, Lewis catches him with a big punch at the end. Marcin Tybura, same thing. He was getting dominated on the ground for 2 rounds. But what's amazing is he's, for a guy who gets taken down pretty easy in Derek Lewis, he doesn't get subbed very often. Daniel Cormier is the only guy to ever submit the Black Beast. And Curtis Blaydes, while he is a wrestling machine, has 0 career wins by submission. So a guy that we know loves to take the fights to the ground. We saw it in his last fight against Alexander Volkov again, where he just continued time after time to take Volkov down. And he's not the best finisher at an elite level, Curtis Blaydes. Most of his finishes come on the ground and pound. Lewis is really tough there. I think over 1.5 rounds in this fight feels really good. I think if Lewis is going to catch Blaydes, it's going to have to come late. And we saw Curtis Blaydes dramatically slow down late in the Alexander Volkov fight. I think a lot of people believe if there was one more round in that fight, Volkov might have had a shot at finishing a very fatigued and gassed Curtis Blaydes. And this could be the same scenario. I think Curtis Blaydes is going to get easy takedown after easy takedown of Derek Lewis for the first couple of rounds. And then we'll see if fatigue sets in, if Derek and Lewis at 35 years old can pull another one of those amazing comebacks that he has so many times against wrestlers late in fights. But I really don't see either guy getting a finish here early. And I went ahead and laid over 1.5 rounds minus 175.
Yeah, so the juice is there. And that's the thing. You can't go to 2.5 as an odds maker. So you just got to move the juice on this and see what happens with the heavyweights. Let's go to the co-main, if you will. Anthony Smith, Devin Clark. And Matthew, I knew you had a couple points you wanted to make there.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those situations we've seen in MMA a lot of times that's happened to guys that were on amazing runs where they viciously get knocked out and then they're never the same. Think back to Henan Barão. Henan Barão was thought of as maybe one of the top 2 or 3 pound for pound fighters in the world, had won 31 straight fights, the bantamweight champion in the UFC. Then TJ Dillashaw caught him and knocked him out. Henan Barão never the same again. And we can go name after name that that's happened to. And I wonder if that happened to Anthony Smith back in May in that Glover Teixeira fight, a fight where Anthony Smith came out very sharp against Glover Teixeira early in the fight, but gassed himself and took a terrible, terrible beating from Glover Teixeira in that fight. And then as we went into his next fight in August against Alexander Rasic, he did not look the same. He did not look like a guy who had it anymore. And now the question is Anthony Smith just going to be another name in the bucket of guys who got viciously KO'd and were never, ever the same again? And it's not that these guys are never the same again. Henan Barão went from top two or three pound for pound in the world to couldn't beat, you know, average fringe contenders in the UFC. It's amazing how much of a drop-off these guys face sometimes after these vicious knockouts. And on the other side, we have a guy in Devin Clark who's really showed a lot of toughness lately, rounding out his game, fought and beat a big striker in Alonzo Menafield in June, had a big win over Daquan Townsend. He's 3-1 his last 4 in the UFC. His losses are to the light heavyweight champ Jan Blachowicz, Alexander Rasic, who just beat Anthony Smith in his last fight. So this is a guy who's really ascending in Devin Clark against a guy who we're not sure what he's got left in the tank in Anthony Lionheart Smith. While I haven't played it yet, I've seen this line creep up. It opened 120, went to 25. Now it's all the way up to Anthony Lionheart Smith minus 135. I don't know in my mind yet what the trigger number is, but there certainly probably is one on Devin Clark. It's dog or pass. And for me, I guess if I can get plus 130, it's probably going to be a play on the underdog.
All right. And Lou, you said what, two ships sailing the opposite directions?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with Matthew's assessment of this. I mean, Smith's been around a long time. He's way older than his 32 years, and though he'll be the taller, longer man, I think he's just in a terrible spot. And I'm ready to pull the trigger on Clark at a dog price. I think he's in a good spot, and he knows he's in a good spot. This is a pelt that will really propel him up the division, and it's a thin talent division, so he stands to gain a lot.
All right, good. So let's go down to the bottom of the main card. We'll keep it on the main card for now, though. Lou, you're on a total here with Sato and Baeza. Usually Matthew's the guy on the totals, but here you're on an over under.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at it myself, but I was surprised at the number. In Sato, if I mispronounce his name, you have a Japanese fighter who is stepping way up in class. The last time he did, he fought Bilal Muhammad, and Bilal Muhammad really had his way with him, even though Bilal Muhammad was the shorter man giving away reach. In this fight, the Brazilian Baeza, who trains with MMA masters, Nico Price, Colby Covington, he comes in, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu specialist who's kind of fallen in love with his hands lately. He's going to be 4 inches the taller man, the bigger structured man with a couple inches of reach advantage. And provided Baeza uses his head, I think he'll be giving away expertise on the feet. Even though he has abundant power, hopefully what he does is takes Sato with just terrible takedown defense, hopefully he takes Sato down early and just mops the floor with him. I believe that's what's going to happen. But Sato is a very durable guy, and the over 1.5 minus 120 seems a really great opportunity to me. That's one of my best bets for today.
Nice. What do you think about that total, Matthew?
I like it. I like that total a lot.
All right, and depending on how you break down the main card, I'm going off the ESPN.com's MMA schedule list, but the final card on the main card is Spike Carlisle and Bill Algeo. My apologies for that mispronunciation. And you guys are on opposite sides, but a lot of this is sort of because of the money line. Matthew, why Carlisle has caught your eye here? I mean, we know why his capabilities, but in terms of the price movement.
First of all, I love Spike Carlisle. I thought this line is getting a smidge rich in that, you know, at minus 175 now on Carlisle. If you haven't watched the Alpha Ginger Spike Carlisle fight, you're missing out. This guy is super entertaining, really gets after it. Normally, I don't like shorter fighters who are that short, muscly build, but Spike Carlisle is unbelievable. His relentless attacks are amazing. He's a constant finisher in there. And I thought he had an amazing fight with a really tough guy in Billy Quarantillo. Quarantillo is one heck of a tough fighter, and that decision was certainly up for grabs in the third round either way. And it looked like Spike might get a finish in that fight early. Bill Algeo is a guy who I actually played in his last fight, because I thought his regional record was the fact that his losses on the regional scene at least were encouraging. You know, on the regional scene, he lost to UFC mainstays like Shane Burgos and Jared Gordon. And I thought, all right, this guy's level of competition even on the regional scene has been pretty good, but the guys he beat actually haven't been that good. It's just the guys that beat him. We saw him lose pretty convincingly in his Dana White Contender Series fight, but then he got a short notice fight because they needed someone to fight Ricardo Lamas in his retirement fight. And I thought, well, here we go. Lamas is going to retire. He has nothing left in the tank. Here comes this guy, Algeo, who's taller, longer, bigger, younger, stronger. And boy, did he lay an egg in that fight. And what I have found is that Bill Algeo has laid an egg every time he stepped up in competition. I don't think that's going to change here. Spike's giving up a lot of height and reach, but Algeo is not a striker anyway. He does most of his work on the ground. If Spike can keep this one standing, I think he gets the win and may get the knockout.
And Lou, you see value on the dog here.
I do see value on the dog here. Spike Carlisle is a whirlwind of a fighter for a round and a half. But he doesn't have pace. He has very little IQ, and he's fighting a guy very similar to Billy Quarantillo, to be quite honestly. And I'm not going to disregard Algeo's ability to stand and strike as easily as Matthew will be. He's going to be 5 inches the taller man. He's going to have 2 inches of reach. And provided he can get this out of the first round, I love his physical advantages over a guy in Carlisle that's predictable. He moves forward and he tries to engage. I think the loss to Lamas is a feather in Algeo's cap. Yes, he was outgunned, but Lamas is substantially better at this state than anyone that Carlisle's fought. And for that reason, I see Algeo at plus 135 and I was interested. Now I see him at plus 160 and I'm more interested.
Interesting. Awesome. I like it. And I always appreciate when you guys are on opposite sides of a fight or two. Let's go to the undercard.
It's fun for us too, I think, instead of agreeing all the time.
Yeah, all right. So you guys got one play each on the card before we wrap things up. I'll let you go first, Matthew. It's higher up. So Dos Santos and Day. Day's minus, let's call it $165 consensus. Why do you like the favorite here?
And look, this kind of goes just to the same analysis that Lou just gave, and I tend to agree with it in most cases, where with Martin Day, we're going to get a guy who's fought a little bit better competition, who's going to be taller, longer, stronger, and younger, and those are combinations I tend to like a lot. He did get knocked out in his last fight in July against the tough Davy Grant in what was a really good back-and-forth fight, and then Grant caught him in the third round and was able to get the finish. On the other side, Anderson Dos Santos, I don't think he belongs at 135 pounds. He's only 5'6". Martin Day, 5'11". So huge height and reach advantages in this fight for Martin Day. Anderson Dos Santos at 35 years old, lost both of his UFC fights convincingly. Didn't look very competitive in either one of them. On the regional scene, he has fought a couple of guys that at least you'll recognize. Saeed Nurmagomedov. Nurmagomedov choked him out in the first round. And at the end of the day here, this is a guy who's, it's harder to be an aging fighter in these lighter weight classes because speed and explosiveness is so important. These guys at 135 pounds or less are just hurricanes in there. I mean, they are so amazingly athletic, so fast, so explosive. At 35 years old and without really ever having a striking game, Anderson Dos Santos, I just don't think he's going to be able to offer much here. His only shot to win this fight is to catch Martin Day in some type of submission early while they're still a little dry and not so sweaty. Otherwise, I think Martin Day is just going to chop up Anderson Dos Santos, and I laid $1.55 on the bigger, younger, stronger fighter who's also the better striker.
Okay, and now the big finish. Lou's best bet is on the undercard as well. Take it away, my friend.
Yeah, and it's a very early fight, ladies, bantam weights. And this is really a simple handicap on my part. You have Gina Mazzani, who is 6-4, but the four losses were against really competent, well-rounded mixed martial artists. She has recently developed a relationship with Tim Elliott, another UFC fighter, and that relationship has caused her to leave her old gym and go and train in Elliott's gym, where they do nothing but grappling and they have dynamic amounts of training partners for him. Her last out was against Avia, and that there's no harm in a loss to Avia. Meanwhile, the opponent she takes on is a gal named Rachel Ostovich. And Ostovich, I basically believe, should not be in the UFC. She's an attractive young lady that at the time the UFC courted her for the organization is very attractive and from Hawaii, and the marketing was good. But behind the marketing, there is no fight game. It's my opinion that Mazzani is just going to tear through Ostovich in this fight. Mazzani's 3 inches taller, going to have 4 inches of reach advantage. She's a lefty, and I think she's reinvigorated with her relationship to Tim Elliott, as well her relationship to mixed martial arts. And it's rare when I'm going to give you a favorite, but at minus 130, I think Mazzani should be minus 200 or better.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's always the thing. When we talk about in all sports, like who have your losses come against, things along those lines. So sometimes the record can be misleading, and it seems like the situation here and switching gyms obviously proves helpful. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I know it's Thanksgiving week, but I really appreciated your efforts the last couple months here and just in general, just all the insight you guys provide. And I know our listeners do as well.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Lou. Happy Thanksgiving. Best of luck. Take care.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Thank you.
Same to you, my man.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
All right, that's going to do it for this podcast, and that wraps up the week as well. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I hope you've all had a wonderful week and hopefully spending time with some family, if not traveling for the understandable reasons, at least making the most of this time. Thanks to Matthew and Lou, and thanks to all the guests this week on the Behind the Bets podcast. And again, next week, kind of relaunching, new format, new everything, same great insight, same great picks, hopefully, and a lot of fun and different tone, if you will, much more digestible and a little bit quicker on everything. So we'll see you back here next week on the Behind the Bets podcast.